Good evening, primetime partiers. It's primetime party time. Welcome back to our hour of all things media and entertainment, live on the air at 9 p.m. at ptptshow.com and on your time, wherever you stream podcasts. Tonight, Daniel and I will give our toasts and roasts of this past week before looking back at our favorite and most memorable moments from the shows that shaped us. So we're going to look back at TV shows that really developed our love of television. I'm Tracy, and this is our co-host,
Daniel. Good evening, Tracy. Another great intro.
Good evening.
As always.
Thanks.
I should always expect to be introduced by you. This is like the eighth time now, and I'm always like, oh no, like I'm about to be introduced. But good evening.
Good
Talking
evening.
About old TV,
yeah.
I'm excited for this, actually. I'm pretty excited for this one. But first, like you said, we got a toast and a roast. What are you toasting to this week?
Similar enough to what we're producing right now is my toast is I have been very busy at work with lots of time-sensitive campaigns and projects, not to use too much corporate jargon, but yes, deadlines. But this week, I kind of had some catch-up time, so I was able to finish a demo for our company podcast. So I'm hoping to, I've been trying to pitch this for a couple years, but obviously the year of COVID, there's a lot of like restructuring and reprioritizing. So I'm hoping to get that going and keep a lot of podcasting in the 9 to 5, in addition to our Mondays at 9.
That's amazing. That's okay. Well, you'll have to plug that when that's ready to publish. That's very exciting. Yeah, you have been talking about that off air for a while. That's cool.
I have. So I know definitely had it parallel amounts of pitching podcasts to corporate and pitching podcasts to Daniel. So it's a lot of ideas making, but then also need to do a lot of doing.
Right.
So,
yep.
So we'll see how people receive it. Definitely know there's always a lot of feelings with new media. Mm-hmm. So trying to push people onto more new media platforms. That's like my drive when I'm corporate Tracy. But right now I'm radio Tracy. And I'm also really excited to go to Tahoe. Ooh. With my boyfriend to see the snow and do a little social distance skiing because there's a lot of places that are kind of small and near where his parents live that is kind of on the Nevada side of Tahoe. So,
nice.
Yeah, I'm equally excited for that, but also anxious because I did rent a car in order to drive in the snow that is expected to come. So, like, once we're there, it'll be fantastic. Mm-hmm. And it'll be really good conditions for snow sports. But every time I've driven up in actual weather, my Californian comes out and I am like, I don't even like driving in the rain. Pre-COVID, yeah. I used to like call into work and be like, it is straight up dangerous for me to go on the 78 to the 15 to the 163 in the rain. I'm a work from home. Ba, ba, ba.
That's very Californian. And that's awesome. I mean,
it is. And to be fair, it was dangerous. Once I started taking the bus, that was better. But then, you know, busing in the rain also really makes you feel like, oh man, I gotta upgrade this life, you know. Mm-hmm. I gotta stop busing in the rain. Even though many people do this, this is just me being a little bit of a like, rain means I cancel everything because I grew up in San Diego. You know, I have a lot of friends and colleagues from Oregon who would be like, you do stuff in the rain. Rain don't stop you.
Right.
You just, you work through that precipitation. Get over yourself. And they are correct. They are. Even though our roads are not built for the rain. That is my only form of defense.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I used to park at a trolley station, I think around like Fashion Valley area, and it would notoriously like flood and be on the news. I remember one day I like saw the news and it was like a full lake and I was like, really hope my car's not submerged in water. And I got there and it was like there was a diagonal where there were cars that were all like flooded, and mine was on like the dry patch, and I was like, thank what? You, guardian parking angel, for watching upon my golf. So I think you might remember we had a high school parking lot too that used to flood, and people get called
yeah,
out to be
totally
like,
did.
Your car is floating away, bro.
That's you hilarious.
Go get that Kia Sereno and you gotta get it out of here.
Oh my God. Yeah, that happened. That did happen. Wow.
Yeah, it humbles us. What mm-hmm. is your toast and roast for this week?
You know, similar in the podcasting realm. So I just finished catching up to the series The Expanse, and so they have apparently been doing an after show that's kind of like headed by one of the lead actors of the show and one of the like lead writers slash like one of the book writers that the series is based on. And so they were doing an after show after every episode, the fifth season, because apparently they had taken an idea to do a podcast to Amazon, and Amazon was like, no, do a YouTube after show. So now what they're doing is they're going back to the very first episode of The Expanse, back when they were on the Sci-Fi Network, and they're going to rewatch the series and talk about what inspired them, like the behind-the-scenes stuff, other sci-fi like IPs that they're really into. And it's really great so far, and they just released the first one. It's called Ty and That Guy. And it's fun, especially in the first episode, if you want to know like where some of the story beats come from. You can find out what major decision they made early in their series that was caused by them playing like a tabletop role-playing game with the characters, and how that actually like led into the show now. So it's really fun, and it just started, and I don't know, I like that content. So that's what I'm toasting to.
I like that. It's almost like taking a really like 90s, early 2000s concept of the DVD extras,
yes,
but going way more in depth and doing like a series on it. Because I mean, I always liked watching that, but you know, we'll get into it. I've been obsessed with like TV and movies for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I was like, gotta see behind the scenes of Pirates of the Caribbean after I watched the movie, and yeah, of like all the Lord of the Rings ones, especially when it's like a shoot on location situation. I feel like those extras were really fun to see, or anything fantasy related, because there's so much that goes into creating that. But I also like this because it's like you're getting to really immerse yourself into the making of the show while them also telling you a lot behind the story that maybe you didn't catch while you were watching, and you'll right. watch it again and feel differently about it. So
yes.
Yeah, I haven't watched The Expanse, full disclosure, so I would have to like do that and then watch that podcast. Though, maybe yeah. I should do one before the other and see as it goes for a watching experiment.
Ooh, I get Schitt's Creek and you get The Expanse or something. Yeah, we might be able to work
deal.
Something out. I like it. All right. Well, speaking of TV, let's get into that right after the break here. It's one of those weeks where I'm not sure if I actually want to roast anything or if I actually just want to roast my mindset. So let's get right back
to it.
You
know, like that's great. It's great when you don't feel like you need to roast something. Like I was in a meeting earlier this week where someone was like, I need to kill some time. Anybody have any jokes? And I was like, I don't know, my life experience. And that didn't land super well. Sometimes deprecating mindsets don't really resonate as much with everyone. They are not of my sheeple if they don't. But yeah, let's, you know, pinkies up our nice comforting glasses. Mugs,
what we
appropriately
have
so, of tea, and then get into our comfort TV, the shows that shaped us.
Okay, Tracy.
Okay.
When we started Primetime Party Time 8 weeks ago, long before that, when we were figuring out the show, I knew that you were always into TV, but I didn't know that the entire aspect of our show and our show's community were all into TV at the level that we are. And so it got me thinking, and it got me thinking about the TV that I'm into as we kind of start bringing our tastes to the table and kind of thinking about oh, wow, getting introspective and how did we even get here then? You know, what are those tastes that define us, that get us to notice, you know, and want to talk about series like Don't Trust the Bitch in Apartment 23 or Angel or et cetera. So where does that start for you?
It starts at the very beginning. A very good place to start.
Are we talking Philo Farnsworth right now?
Let's skip out a bit. It's also Julie Andrews. But I have always been I don't know if you can be genetically addicted to television the same way other people are addicted to things, but that's definitely a thing in my family. My mom would tell me, your grandfather always had to have the TV on at all times, just have ambient noise and show on. And I feel similarly. I don't really sit in silence. I sit in television. That's my choice.
Okay.
yeah. And I don't know. That's kind of where it definitely began with cartoons. And specifically, I remember that there were certain hours, not really set in stone, but I was supposed to be in bed at a certain time and stop watching TV. And I pretty much regularly went, meh. Gonna do it anyway. Gonna disregard these suggestions that the parental sent over. And
I like that. I remember,
it's a very small rebellion. There's much larger rebellions to have as a youth. So I remember my dad would unscrew the cable cord that went into my little box of a TV, and I quickly figured out how to screw it back in and kind of turn the volume down and be you know, there's a nostalgia for being I'm in the covers. I've got my flashlight, you know, make sure nobody's walking by and gonna keep watching Scooby-Doo onto going back to Disney Channel. And they would show these really old classics like Steamboat Willie or Legend of Zorro.
Oh, wow.
And I remember, and that's the child that stays up until 2 a.m. So, you know, I did that. And still somewhat do to this day. That's definitely just my natural circadian rhythm. But my grandpa lived in the room next to me. It was a nice old multi-generational household. And he would play his TV pretty loud. It was always kind of blaring whatever he was watching. And I would be very curious and want to come over and watch the shows with him that were all very dry comedies, which definitely osmosis into me as I grew up and, you know, made it so that I made lots of commentary that maybe was questionable for certain age groups or perhaps offensive upon middle school. So that was definitely part of my development. But yeah, they were not exactly age appropriate, but they were all very smart shows. And I would definitely have vivid memories of watching Curb Your Enthusiasm while playing poker. And he also watched a lot of Monk, which I recall Tony Shalhoub being on the TV, but I don't really remember the show. That's something I'd have to revisit to really understand the plots. But
yeah, that's my recollection of Monk as well.
I can kind of see these were your tastes. I can see how they kind of infiltrated into mine. But yeah, I was definitely a nostalgia fan then, nostalgia fan now. And also my parents were big naysayers if they ever listened to the show, which means I would have to send it to them, which I will. They would agree that I was not exactly allowed to do a bunch. I wasn't I had a ton of strict rules, but there was a lot of things they said no to, no, I don't want you going to that person's house. I don't know them.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I would just stay home a lot and thus would watch a lot of TV. I think I also just enjoyed the me time. So there's a combo of being school is a lot. I need to decompress.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to do that by I feel like I would start where I felt like I needed to. be like, okay, you got to start on MTV and watch TRL because that's like required reading as a 13-year-old girl. But then after that, you're going to switch it to TV Land and you're going to watch Happy Days, Gidget, Gilligan's Island, I Dream of Jeannie, Bewitched, I Love Lucy, and Mary Tyler Moore.
Wow.
And not be able to talk about that with anyone remotely in your age group until you take like film and media studies classes in college.
Yeah, okay.
Then you'll find some people who are like, oh yeah, I did that too. Like, of course you did.
There that's
you
so funny. So that's what they talk about when they say find your people in college, huh?
Find the people who also stayed in. Yeah. And I feel like it's cool because you do see the contrast when you grow up on like the golden age of television, because we really did go in from like prime time to high quality shows on streaming. Like, we definitely go in from episodes that start and end, finish plots within one, to series length plot lines, and getting into that, like, you know, what they call the must see TV and the high next step above. It started with Twin Peaks and The Sopranos. So it's definitely fun. Like, I do like going back and revisiting kind of that other era of TV where there's like jingles and intermissions and really like goofy just one-liners to each other. It's fun. And then you do start to see, like, as time goes on, there's more and more things that kind of like string across episodes to get to the point where we are now. So that's like my personal testimony of TV, you know, geekdom that penetrates my life to this day.
Yeah, that would do it. That would do it. Shout out to your grandfather. For sure.
I know. He's a big role in the I'm sure he had grand plans of like, now you continue the family legacy by watching as much television as you can, writing papers about it in college, and starting a podcast later.
Right.
Do us proud.
I think my path is fairly similar, though, like, with the parental unit being very different, I guess, as far as, like, characters within the story. I can trace my love of TV specifically like back to a single day, and I want to say it had to have been, it was a Halloween for sure, and it had to be either 1997 or 98. I was in the house that I grew up in that my parents still have, and yeah. I distinctly remember them like grabbing a gift from the closet, which is not how Halloween works, but you know, it was a nice gesture. Yeah. and so it was a gift, and it was like this little, like, you know, like a Transformer cheetah. And at that time, like, that franchise, which was best known at the time for like Saturday morning drivel cartoons, had been like thrown to some Canadian studio, and they were doing CGI cartoons and whatnot. What started as just kind of like an episodic procedural kind of like kid show, you know, bad guys have a plan, good guys need to stop them, ended up becoming much more, and ended up kind of really fleshing the characters out. And it's funny because you go back and you kind of wonder, well, why? And you kind of like see all the like fun quirks of it. Like, well, we were, you know, using CGI animation, so we couldn't have so many characters on screen. And then they started getting wild with the writing, and then they started to tie it back into the old show that I knew nothing about, obviously. I was five, so I hadn't watched the show that had come out 10 years before, but it didn't really matter. They had kind of like tied it in, made it more serialized to that, and made it a continuation of that. And then they had passed the sequel series on to another writer who thought that he was going to get a show for a property he really liked. Ended up getting this one, but still kind of wanted to bring his ambition and big dreams and like big ideas to it. And so he kind of did. And all the while I'm sitting there like, whoa, what is this? How does this work? Like, and yeah, it was really interesting. It had like these long running plots and these characters that like the plot lines would mirror primetime shows with like moles within organizations that would come out two seasons later and stuff like that. And my little kid brain, like every morning before we'd go to kindergarten or whatever, was just wild about it. Right. And I had to, you know, if we weren't staying, I was thrown in the VHS recording that. And so, yeah, there was definitely that for a while. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like you said, it's like when we were growing up, there were like a lot of like maturation and like the mediums as far as like more serialized storytelling, and like to the point where like even Lego set storylines were pretty good growing up, which is kind of wild. But as far as like what was past that, I never really like looked past that for a long time. Like I do know, like for The Sopranos, I don't think I was ever allowed to watch it, but it's kind of funny because we'd always have a neighbor who was 5 or 6 years older than me, and he'd always come over, and like, I don't know where my dad got like a weightlifting bench, but he'd use the weightlifting bench because he was on the San Marcos football team. And and after that, which I think was the real purpose of all of this, he'd sneak in and watch an episode of Sopranos before going home because his parents wouldn't let him watch Sopranos. And it's hilarious in hindsight because I was sneaking over to their house to play Grand Theft Auto because our parents wouldn't allow Grand Theft Auto in. But what my parents did allow, and this was kind of strange, is thinking back, is like I shared my bedroom with the computer room. And I guess in the like very early like 1999 to 2002 era, it was really cool to like be able to put cable on your computer. So my dad did that, and then I would turn it on and basically like fall asleep sometimes to what basically became Adult Swim, because, you know, as it get later and later. And so that would kind of keep me busy for a while, up until pretty much I remember distinctly another like single night was like another breakthrough was whenever in 2006, January 2006, the like fifth season of 24 premiered. I distinctly remember getting kicked out of the family room because my mom was like, nope, this is it. This is my much-watched TV. You get to go find something else to do right now. And so I basically, in protest, went to her room, turned on the TV, and I'm like, well, what is this? It's not good. Like, what'd she kick me out of the room for? This isn't going to be that great. Came in first commercial break, and I'm like, I am floored. Let's go. We're doing this every Monday for the rest of all time. And
on the Sutherland train.
So much so that I'd start booking up their DVR because, like, I don't remember if it was TBS or TNT or somebody would air like 5 episodes of previous seasons a day in these blocks from like noon to 5. And so I just eat that up or the summers, whatnot, and like catch up for the next year's season or whatnot. And then when I wasn't watching, you know, 24 on Monday nights, I would kind of go in and I'd hit up the wiki. And this wiki is one of the best wikis ever devised. It's just chocked full of encyclopedic information. And I'd start to read up on things, on what I didn't understand. Because if you've ever seen the show, the fifth season premiere is somewhat of a legendary episode and somewhat not one to start the show on. So I didn't get the memo on that. But even then, going to the wiki kind of advised how I see certain like fun trivial facts about TV and episode orders and stuff like that in a way that's actually sort of helped, you know, now the doing a job that has to do with metadata in media. It's a lot is a callback to those nights hanging out on the wiki, having that sort of like knowledge of like, oh yeah, this is episode this, season this, episode this, and this is what happens. And now it's, you know, it's like you go into meetings and I'm like, oh yeah, we're talking about this series. And they're like, yeah, there's this one episode. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's, you know, season 2, episode 9. I'll go grab a thumbnail from it. And it's like, wait, how'd you know that? And it's training. It's just a lot of training. So yeah, so I ended up like basically joining my parents home, and I was like, all right, well, what else is like this? Because this blows everything wide open. This is better than anything I'm watching on Disney, Nickelodeon. Like, let's go, you know? And like, obviously, sitcoms were on here and there, and I was always kind of watching those in the background. Friends, you know, Seinfeld, Everybody Loves Raymond, were those of that time. But yeah, so I'd start sitting down and I'd start, you know, like, okay, let's get into this, you know? Shows like Chuck, you know, would come on airs, and I'd watch them with my parents. And then I started realizing I could get extra hours into the night of not having to go to sleep yet if I were hanging out with my parents instead of, you know, just myself. And so I'd kind of sit down and be like, well, what are we watching today? You know, what's Boston Legal? And on Sunday, the last day of the week that I still was going to bed at like 10, I sat down. I'm like, well, what is this, Dad? What's The Wire? But, and I distinctly remember, like, in middle school too, being on, like, message boards, you know, like the anonymous message boards. And I remember there was this dude who was so into the show Arrested Development. And it was like during the Save the Booths campaign, or maybe right before, you know? And I guess either wanting that like camaraderie with that person, or actually going out and seeing that the show was amazing. I distinctly remember going to like PE class in seventh grade and trying to get every kid in PE to like go home, watch, you know, Arrested Development tonight, Save the Show, Save the Booths. And so that was like a big moment in like growing up with TV, like learning about it.
I didn't watch Arrested Development until it was on Netflix. And once I did, though, I was like, how did this show ever get canceled? It's so funny. It has so many like inside jokes. It has so many layers, especially going to UC Irvine. I actually had a journalism professor that gave me an Arrested Development quiz like to all of our students in class for extra credit. Because there is a theory that the Bluths are based off of the Bren family. Like, it's kind of like a rumor. I don't think there's much, you know, substance to it. In general, like, that's where people draw a lot of comparisons, is that the Irvine Company / the, you know, Bluths, it's supposed to be that same thing where they've taken over like all of Orange County. And then, you know, the only thing with the Bluths is that, you know, they obviously have some issues with fraud and many other things. They're a family of characters, to say the least, that I love. But like, you know, they're and similar to our Don't Trust the Bee episode, it's definitely also a cohort of family members that are like, what's the worst thing I can do in this situation?
Yeah, exactly.
And Michael's kind of there to be like, I mean, I don't do that. The rest of you do that, except for when he kind of goes, I did it.
Right. Yep. So when do your parents like ease on your restrictions? When do you like stop? Like, what's the turning point for you where you stop having to like live out your like TV watching in rebellious silence, and you're able to kind of just like join the fray, right? Like, start to share that with them, or start to, you know, let that out in the open.
I feel like it was, you know, middle school. I mean, elementary school towards the end, I don't remember really being like, oh, I have to, you know, play the TV lower. I think that was definitely like a younger kid time. Mm-hmm. And I think like it's weird because, you know, there were certain rules around the TV, but I also know we were always like allowed to watch The Simpsons, and there could be jokes that like maybe were also, yeah, like above a kid's level. But I think they were just like, it's too good. You have to watch The Simpsons and Seinfeld. We'll have some rules about some other stuff, but we feel this is important for you.
That's
great.
You
start with Sesame Street, you get to The Simpsons. Those are our rules. So yeah, middle school, I definitely just started to just watch everything. I think they were pretty fine. They're like, you know, Tracy could be going off, getting into trouble, but she's mostly just like reading a lot and watching a lot of TV. I mean, she could be more social, but we're not worried per se. So I think at that point I was pretty like, meh. And then high school especially too, because I feel like I watched a lot of TV while doing AP notes. I just would like put something on while I did chapters and chapters and chapters. So that was like another thing that helped with that. But yeah, I feel like what's cool though is because there were some things that were kind of somewhat banned as a kid, it made you, you know, really want to get back into them more. And I also feel like I had a similar memory of I was younger, and I think my mom and her friends wanted to watch Sex in the City, and like I didn't want to leave, but obviously I could not stay. Mm-hmm. And I think my dad like bribed me, like, we're gonna go see the Spider-Man movie with like the male relatives, you're gonna come too, I will get you your own candy. And I was like, okay, we could do this. And then I was really hooked on the Spider-Man franchise. But that was also like the first one with Tobey Maguire. So like, it was strong.
I was just gonna say that this is my favorite part of this story, is that like it could happen this year. They're still making Spider-Man movies and Sex and the City's coming back. So like somebody could be sharing this exact experience.
There'll be the version of me that's like 20 years younger being like, I remember this show starting to air. And you're like, not exactly.
Right, right.
But also you're not wrong. They're all coming back. I know. It is kind of crazy how many things have rebooted. But it's also the way, the kind of like the circle of TV life. You either get retooled or rebooted in some shape or form. There's still a lot of great new TV too.
Yes.
But the three shows that I would list that really did shape my TV obsessions, and one I've already brought up, I would say Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I'd like go on to say like Larry David, because I liked Seinfeld a lot as well. But those are definitely like in the memory bank of, you know, beginnings of love in a comedy. The second is 30 Rock. That's definitely a show where once I started, I was like, this is all I need. I love Tina Fey. And I will follow her to every show she does. And I really have. Except for I still need to watch the interactive Kimmy Schmidt special. That is one that I am supposed to watch with friend of the pod, BMAC, and I am months. I will repeat,
almost,
months.
Yeah, almost overdue. Years, right?
Almost a
we
year.
We almost a
I know.
Year?
I feel like because I did the Black Mirror interactive episode, I was like, you got to really have the focus to follow this journey. And you can't just like watch that and do stuff. Like you need to dedicate a day to this. And so I put it off for a while. In the meantime, have watched many series that we have discussed on this show. So, you know, I could do this, but I have yet not. But and then the third is definitely Sailor Moon. That's also a show I watched as a young kid when it was originally on Cartoon Network, and completely different than what you would watch on Hulu now, because they made it for kids, even though it was not really a children's show. It was kind of more of like a teen show, and they would cut anything that was somewhat explicit. They would put these things called like Sailor Says, where, you know, if an episode had everyone like, you know, oh, she feels like she needs to exercise a lot to be thinner, they'd be like, you don't need to do that. You should love yourself the way you are. That's what Sailor Says.
Like, a who's like that Pokemon? Kind of like interstitial?
Yes, exactly. Weird. Like those. Yeah, it was weird. And if you watch them now, you will not see that, because those were all like added in to the Sailor Moon episodes that you watched in the 90s. So when you watch it now, it's definitely more of an, you know, a young adult show. The same way it would be like, you know, the YA book section at the store. It can get like, as the series progresses, they will make a little bit more like double entendre jokes, and they'll be like, you know, oh, she accidentally got drunk at the party kind of thing. Or you're like, ooh, you know, it's wink winks. But it's never anything that I would say like, you know, a kid would not discover from just having friends that are a few years older. So it's right. Still pretty safe content. But yeah, I feel like though that show, I went back to it in high school when I found it on YouTube and was like, I'm just going to binge all of this. Like, I was definitely a case study for someone who needed Netflix, because I would just like find things online that were probably not, you know, permissible to be there, and endlessly watch. And then I decided, like, wow, I didn't remember all this stuff. And there's all these details that were definitely left out when I watched this originally. And I really like the slapstick comedy mixed with, like, the kind of dramatic storylines and the superhero aspect, but also the, it's definitely like the beginning of like strong female portrayal in show that I watched as a younger kid that would then, you know, grow on to inspire, like, I'm going to watch Buffy. I'm right. going to watch Veronica Mars, like, you know, these like hero shows. So when it began with Sailor Moon.
When you went and rewatched Sailor Moon, were you able to get the version that you watched? Like, is Sailor Moon one of the shows that had like multiple dubs, for example? Which, speaking of, I guess this is an aside, the only TV memory I have with my grandfather is I sat him down and forced him to watch the Dragon Ball Z finale, and he hated it. No, but
That's
back
hilarious.
To the question at hand, because I know that that show, I think, has like a couple different like actual versions or dubs that you can watch, and they even did one where they kind of like cut down a lot of the series to make it more streamlined. Now I know that like Sailor Moon came back and that they've done some like reimaginings, but have they like either recut the like show that you grew up watching, redubbed the show that you grew up watching? Obviously, I guess they took out the interstitials. You said yes, so like what was different?
They definitely remastered it for sure, and then there were edits like in the original one that went on American television. They thought at the time during the 90s that having like a gay couple was not appropriate for kids, which is incorrect. Mm-hmm. But that's what happened in the 90s. And so, but what they did, which I think is way more controversial, is that they made them cousins instead, but they didn't change the dialogue a lot. So people, they would be talking to each other like romantically, but they were cousins, and you're just like, I don't understand why you guys had to.
Nice.
Why did you redo this team. Like and make it like incesty when this was just like a really nice relationship?
That's
like, why did you do that? And like this show in general is very Sailor Moon is very progressive. Like they show a lot of different kind of like gender identities and attraction, and they make it a very like fluid show with a lot of the characters. So it did not make sense when I look back, because I remember being like, I thought those girls were cousins because that's what they said on the TV show as a child. And then I watched that, I was like, that is wrong. No.
Wow.
No. Yeah. So that was whoever did that at Cartoon Network, not a great decision, and also not very nice to many people in the community. But they remastered it to, you know, stay true to the actual show. And I know that like they even recently redubbed, there's like a final season 5 that was called Sailor Stars, where they have some Sailor Scouts from like the Outer Limits, where they're originally like in their human forms, they're males, and then when they're Sailor Scouts, they're females. And then also a bunch of people get killed off like temporarily. So it's a pretty like dramatic season in general, because they're like unfolding people's identities, like who is this person? They're kind of supposed to be like an idol band, and then they find out like later that they're Sailor Scouts as well. And then for like this whole season, and it's not really a spoiler because this has been out since the 90s, y'all, but like the love interest Mamo slash, that's actually a good point before I, but I'll wrap this up first, is that he like gets, they have like these star seeds, which are kind of like life essences, life force, and like this other Sailor Scout that's like super powerful steals his, so like he's like kind of dormantly dead for like most of the season, and she doesn't know why he's not like answering her letters and stuff.
So
you could see why like it wasn't aired for kids in that sense. Like it's a lot of like loss, but then in the end everything works out. But definitely the enemies get like per season more and more intense. Mm-hmm. Like it starts out being like, oh, they take people's energies away, they're all tired, and then like it gets to be more like, we're taking their souls, we're taking their dreams, now we're just like zapping them. We're taking all of that life essence. We're just taking it all.
It's like, it's exactly the same thing with Dragon Ball. It's, you know, it starts out, one of the kids dies near the end of the first series, and then by the end of the second series, everybody gets turned into a cookie and eaten on screen. It's great.
I also love that you watched the series finale of Dragon Ball with your grandpa. That's really great. But the other main difference when they ended up, not for him, when they ended up remastering this show is that in the one that you watched as a child on American television, they changed a lot of the names to be American names. Some of them stayed the same when they're kind of like synonymous with kind of regular, not regular, but like what names that English speaking Americans would be familiar with. So like her name, like Sailor Moon's name is Usagi, which means rabbit in Japanese, which is why there's all these bunnies on stuff.
Okay.
But in the original American version, her name was Serena.
I remember that.
Not a reason for that. And then her love interest's name is Darien. But his real name on the show that you'd watch on Hulu now is Mamoru, and they call him Mamo. And yeah, there's Rey, has her name is the same, since that was like, okay, people know Rey. Amy was the American version, and Japanese version is Ami. And then Mina is Minako, but I think she might have had a different name in the original show, but I honestly don't remember anymore. And then Sailor Jupiter's one is called Makoto or Mako in the Japanese version, and again I am blanking on what they named her in the American version,
because again
I'm just like so solidified. And all of their last names of the Sailor Scouts mean the element that their Sailor Scout represents. It's just, they're all like, it's just in Japanese, like Rei's means fire and Amy's means water. Mrs. means love. And Jupiter's, I think, is like forest / earth. So yeah, it's really interesting because you're like, huh. Yeah. And then Chibi Usa just means little / mini Usagi. And I think they called her Reenie in the American version because it was like the most nickname-y they could make up Serena. So there's a lot of stuff. They really did have to redub a lot. So I think there was a full redubbing of the show.
I see.
And they're actually, and then they're now, I think they've released it on DVD. I was like looking into ordering it, but they haven't released the actual streaming version of the fifth season in English dub.
It's only subbed, huh?
Subtitles right now.
Wow.
Yep.
You know, I have ordered DVDs of kids series that I used to watch that I've even referenced on this very episode. And for the commentary tracks alone, it's a great time. It kind of lets you know, like, just where they were at, or even just, you know, just having it, I suppose, like, even if not, if you have that dubbed version. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely like when you think about shows like Don't Trust the Bee, where we look into production and there's all these different, you know, ways you could have viewed the show. It's very similar to certain shows we viewed in the 90s that were adapted for, you know, Toonami.
Yeah.
That really should have been more on Adult Swim, because I haven't rewatched Dragon Ball in a while, but I'm sure it'd have a similar situation where you're like, I don't recall this happening. If you looked it up, you'd be like, they just like whitewashed this with a bunch of stuff. Then you find out later, like, oh, no, it was perfectly fine in the original form. Thanks, guys. But right. It's also a different time period and, you know, different network controls. And now I definitely think we're in a better place where, since also we're in all these streaming worlds as well, there's just like different delineations of how that creative control exists. And in, you know, also more of a television utopia state. Yeah. So I think it's looking back and going like,
no, yeah,
not my favorite, but also like, it was then and this is now. And,
yeah,
you know, it's good to see, you know, a lot of things being like, well, all right,
yeah,
not a fan, but I'm glad now I can watch it in its integrity and see the show for what it was. So there's, I feel like it's always like good to hold on to the positive note instead of just going on a roast-a-thon flick.
Well, of course.
How dare the edit.
Yeah, I will say I've like, I had one of those, like, I definitely had an anime as a kid that I've gone back and I've watched it with the Japanese subtitles and I've watched it again with the American dub. And then, and you kind of do see like, okay, like this stuff was changed and it's especially frustrating when it's stuff like they take like the nuances of like the character conflicts even and they simplify it in translation. And it's like, no, you don't have to do that. But it goes the other way too. The show that I was talking about that I used to watch that was like a Canadian studio, they dubbed that and they sent that over to Japan and they switched the personalities of every single character and they took this charismatic, like really great villain, basically like, in my opinion, like the core of like what makes the show great is because this guy works, right? Like that's how a kid's series works sometimes, is you need the great villain to kind of just like make the good guys just the people trying to stop whatever his schemes are. And he was just, you know, he was really cunning, really smart. He was, you know, played with this. The David Kaye did an amazing job kind of like bringing Sean Connery into this like villainous kind of role, or channeling Sean Connery into this villainous role and having a lot of fun with it. And if you watch the Japanese version, they call this version of Megatron Chibitron because he's just a doofus. He's just like,
he needs
to go home and do other stuff. And he's just absolutely incompetent, as are most of the other characters. And anytime that they can throw in something for a laugh, they do. And so it's like in the very same way that we got shows from that franchise or other franchises, and they're kind of botched in the translation, they got shows translated and botched in the translation. And it's like, wait, why? Yeah, it's kind of funny. I don't know.
It's interesting seeing what people do to adapt to different audiences, mm-hmm. where it's like completely changing characters. You're like, why? I feel like these would resonate well with everyone, but I think that's something that now is way more common. Like you do see shows that are developed and they'll translate the dialogue, but for the most part you're like, okay, the shows at its core stay fairly the same.
Yeah.
But back then it does seem like, yeah, both ways there was some sort of like taking creative liberties when they got shows for translation. That would be interesting to look into. But I like
either.
This episode. It's
yeah.
like going back into our memory banks of
yeah.
all the shows that we loved and the ones that really got like the ball rolling on. I started watching this show, obsessed with it, and then I decided like I needed to continue on this path.
Right, yeah.
Finding another show that fits this whole. Like, do you ever find that you feel like you keep finding new shows because you finish one and you're like, I gotta fill my show hole.
Yes,
and
that's where I'm at right now.
That sounds like pretty dirty, but you know what? We're going
to fill the show hole.
And yeah, and like that's something that I feel like I'll stop something and be like, I gotta find the next one. And I even did that with books where I'd be like, this one's next. All right, is there another like, you know, spinoff series I can watch so that I can like continue on this universe, or at least find something up like recommended. If you like this, then you'll like this.
Right.
I go into that. I go into that a lot. So, yeah.
I'm about to. Well, I mean, I guess now's the time to do Schitt's Creek and Inuyasha because being finished with The Expanse, that's definitely where I'm at. Like right now is like,
yeah.
I need something. I need some like serialized, great, you know, epic. This is high stakes. This is everything that matters.
I mean, I'm so ready mentally to just start rewatching Inuyasha from the beginning.
That was one of the shows. Inuyasha was one of the shows on Adult Swim.
Yes.
No, Inuyasha would come on Because, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, the Beast shows got me into the Transformers franchise. So when we were in elementary school, those are the ones that turned anime. And they aired the first one at 10:30 at night on a Saturday, which is right before the Adult Swim programming block came on, which is Inuyasha was the very first show at 11 p.m. on Adult Swim on Saturday nights. So I would watch Inuyasha specifically because Transformers Armada was the lead into it.
Ah, that is such a thing. I was thinking earlier when you were talking about TNT, like I used to watch like 7 episodes in a row of like Charmed because it wasn't on the air anymore or was airing a different season, and that's how you would catch up. And then there were things like that where you'd be like, I really want to watch this show, so I'm either going to watch the one before or after just to like stay on that channel, like, because, you know, changing it would be too much work. But that is how I found a lot of shows. I watched like Gilmore Girls that way. I didn't watch it exactly when it aired, but I caught up to it because they would put ABC Family reruns on and have marathons all the time. And same with Smallville. I feel like I didn't watch that in the first season, but I'd watch it like third season onwards because it'd be like, at this point, I've caught up with what's airing now.
Okay.
And yeah, Inuyasha, I do have vivid memories of staying up like too late on weeknights. And because I think on the weeknight schedule, it would air at like 1 a.m. or something. And my brother and I would come down from our respective caves of like homework and make like instant noodles and just watch Inuyasha and be like, we'll regret this tomorrow when we have to wake up at 6.
Right.
But right now.
Going back to Dragon, I don't know when Sailor Moon originally aired. But like Dragon Ball Z, like I watched the finale with my grandfather mid-2000s, early 2000s. But if you like go check when that actually aired, it was like 1995.
Yeah, there's definitely some lag getting it to us, understandably so. Yeah. I look at so many anime and other shows that have to be translated and go, wow, you guys pretty much have to do this show twice. No, it's really cool to see the versions of shows because I think there's a lot of similarities between anime shows and a lot of other shows that we'll watch on American television, a lot of shows you watch on British television. You just kind of see like the similar thread between all of them. Mm-hmm. But each of the kind of anime definitely isn't afraid to have a bunch of variety. And you'll see that where it's like there's an entire genre because of Sailor Moon called like shoujo/magical girl. That's all about having a main character who's like a magical girl. And they're not afraid to be like, this show is inspired by this and similar to this, but it's also this person's writing. It's also a different, you know, storyline. But, you know, if you do like this, you'll like this. They'll have shows called like, there's a genre called slice of life. That's kind of like more of a, you know, sitcom style show where it's like, okay, you're going to see them go to school and interact with their classmates. And, you know, it's just kind of for enjoyment and something kind of warm-hearted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's interesting seeing different genres in different mediums and comparing them to what, like, we have and going, the, you know, equivalent for this show is this show. I know the one comparison in my household we've made is we've been watching My Hero Academia. Sean really likes watching The Boys, and it's kind of a similar concept because The Boys is about heroes that kind of go corporate, and then My Hero Academia is about like them starting in school, but their goal is to get hired by these hero companies. So you're kind of just seeing like, oh, like this is like a similar idea of like the hero that kind of has to go to the office.
Right. Okay.
And
yeah.
Different ways that it grows and takes form. So, thanks for listening for all of our TV stories, and we definitely want to hear yours. So, if you drop us a voicemail on our voicemail box on ptptshow.com, we'd love to hear your insights and where your journey with television began.
Yes, and that's it for this week's Primetime Party Time. Thank you for joining us. Find us on all podcast platforms or right here on ptptshow.com Monday nights at 9 p.m. The show couldn't have been made without the amazing people. Artwork, Fen. Find her at FenLatte on Instagram. Theme song by Jay Wright. Go ahead and go to jwrightmusic.com for him. Website in help to our good friend Coco. We're your hosts. That's
Tracy.
And this is Daniel. And that is Prime Time Party Time. This thing still plays out for a couple seconds. You got anything left, Tracy? Or you off for the long weekend?
Off for the long weekend, but I'm grooving on the vibe of pastime party time.
Mac is currently texting me about his Expanse viewing experience, and I can't tell him I'm sad for him, but I'm sad for him. I hope he gets to the end of that storyline before he listens to this episode.